This is Forrest Elise interviewing Yejin Boyle at 10:52 on
June 20th
for the Creative Push Project. All right, so for starters, why don't you kind of take us back to around the time, you know what, we didn't talk about this, but you have three children.
Yes.
So in terms of the process, you're welcome to start chronologically or however you want to in terms of their births, or just choose one and focus on that one. So, again, this can all be edited, so however it unfolds is fine. So maybe whichever birth you want to talk about first, take us back to the time of that pregnancy or the labor and delivery time. Was there anything really that memorable about it? You know, stock market crash or, you know, anything weather-wise, anything you can think of that might be able to help situate us in time.
Okay. With my first pregnancy, it was with my son, Miles, and it was my first child and my husband, Jesse's third, but it was our first boy. So we were very excited about it, and we had only been married, I think, a few months at the time when I found out that I was pregnant. It was around Christmas, so to announce the pregnancy to my husband, I packed him, made him a little goodie bag full of all of his favorite treats. He was at home from work that day. Due to an injury, he had stepped on a nail at work and had to get a tetanus shot. So he was laying down on the couch, resting. And when I got home from work, I gave him his goodie bag, and one of the items was a fortune cookie. And when he opened it up, it had I don't remember exactly what I'd written in there, something about a baby boy coming in the September the following year, or something like that, coming soon, and then the date of his, like, when he was supposed to be born. And so he was really excited. I was so excited. Oh, sorry. I didn't know that it was a boy at that time. Everything's kind of a blur with the first one after having three. But it was unexpected. I remember crying a lot when I found out that I was pregnant, just because we weren't ready for it financially, emotionally, or any part of our lives was ready for a child. But after calming down and realizing, you know, this is such a blessing and God will provide for us, and, you know, we're going to love this baby and plenty of people do it, I started to slowly come around and get more and more excited. Once I found out that we were having a boy was when I was really, really excited and looking forward to it. The other kink in the story came when my husband had received a DUI, or been arrested for a DUI about a year ago, and his court date had been postponed. Well, shortly after I found out that I was pregnant, we received a notice in the mail that he had to appear in court again. And when he spoke with the court-appointed attorney, they told him that he was going to have to serve 4 months. And so Jesse and I had talked about it, that he would rather be there for the delivery. So when he appeared in court, he accepted their offer from the prosecutor and asked if he could just go in that day as soon as possible. So I was about 4 months pregnant when he went to go serve a 4 month term. Yes. So, and it was in the middle of summer. It was really hot. We were in our first house at the time, which was a two-story house. So if you can imagine a 4 month pregnant woman, from 4 to 8 months pregnant, I was home alone with my cat, who was my roommate at the time. I would just hang out with him, watch TV. I became extremely unhealthy. No one was there helping me or monitoring what I ate. And plus, I had been on a diet for 20 years of my life. And so I just went crazy, like 4 Hot Pockets in a sitting, watching marathon of Law & Order SVU. I went a little overboard. And then also, you know, going to work full time and then trying to visit Jesse in prison. It was somewhat embarrassing. The first time I went there, I am obviously pregnant, standing in line with all these people, visiting my husband in prison and thinking, oh my gosh, my poor Korean mother, what is going on in my life? But Jesse, so by the time I had been able to get approved to see Jesse in prison, I was probably about 6 or 7 months pregnant. So he saw me at 4 months and then jumped to 6 or 7 months later was the next time he saw me. And he was just like blown away at how big I had gotten. And we weren't allowed to touch each other either. So his natural inclination is to, you know, like touch my belly, try to feel the baby, but he couldn't. So, you know, we just sat across the table from each other talking for an hour. I'd go home and I would just visit him probably every weekend. And it was like that. We'd eat food from the vending machine. And then I'd go home, hang out with Monkey, watch TV, go to sleep, and then try to like make time just pass by until he was released. Well, finally, you know, everything went well with my pregnancy. I just tried to stay strong. I went to church a lot. My mom said that. And then my mom was also very encouraging because she said, you know, you're going to be strong through your pregnancy. You're going to have a very strong son. You know, you have to make sure that you're not letting the stress get to you because that's going to affect your baby and his temperament. So just stay positive and be happy and hopeful. And so that's what I did throughout the whole pregnancy. And then when Jesse was released, it was only a few weeks until we had until I was due. During that time, I tried everything possible. The closer we got to delivery, the due date, to go into labor, but nothing worked. You know, we walked around the mall. I think I might have taken some castor oil. I did everything that they told you to do. And then finally, I was like, all right, we're just going to have sex. Just get it done. Let's just do it. And like, no, it's like the most unromantic sex ever. And I'm just huge and uncomfortable. And he's like behind me, like all like mortified himself. But that didn't work. And so finally, and then I went into my doctor's office and she stripped my membranes, which is where they go in and they, I think that they like do something on the inside to, it's some medical thing. They strip your membranes, Google it. And then, she checked my cervix. I wasn't dilating properly. And so I was 2 weeks overdue when she finally scheduled the C-section. She was like, okay, or sorry. She scheduled me to go in to the hospital and force my contractions to start, which I forgot exactly what it's called. Yes, sorry. I received a Pitocin drip, and which would get my contractions going as they waited for me to dilate. They broke my water, and nothing worked. And finally, after 30-some-odd hours of labor, because I was going into labor during that time, so the contractions were starting. It was a really uncomfortable situation. I've always been a very private person, but after giving birth, like all of your, I guess, shyness kind of like goes out the door when you have doctors coming in and out, checking your vagina, teams of people you've never met before, 12-year-old med students coming in looking at you. I'm a pretty open person physically at this point in my life because of all those experiences. But I didn't go into labor, so the C-section was scheduled. I was really disappointed about it just because no one wants a C-section. And also because, you know, you always hear that doctors just schedule C-sections when it's unnecessary because they want to continually move moms through the whole process of labor and delivery and everything. And I just felt like I wasn't really comfortable or happy with it. But because my water was broke and the baby was already in the birth canal, I had to just go through with it. So I felt like it was the best option at that time. And so it wasn't my doctor, my regular doctor who performed the C-section, but it was another doctor from that clinic. And I was really scared. First of all, the hospital is really, even though it's a place where people are supposed to heal and get better, it's a really cold and sterile environment. So what you're seeing visually is counterintuitive to what you're supposed to be receiving physically and on the inside. So it's kind of hard to process visually like that. I am receiving healing when you feel like you're basically in a cell, you know, and without any like natural light or any like color. or it's everything's kind of white or shades of gray and blue, whatever the hospital's colors are. And then also people are so used to this process who are working with you. The nurses and doctors are specifically assigned to the maternity ward. So you kind of feel like just a number that's going through the system as opposed to a person that they're taking care of. And they don't really explain things that well, especially for a first time mom. I would have appreciated a little bit better bedside manner, you know, as opposed to people just coming in, you know, like, oh, we're going to do your drip. Here's your IV. You're going to put in your catheter, you know, a little bit more of a conversational or personal level of care would have been better. So I was already nervous from that. And then I had, when I asked for the,
Ashley, is that, are you going to be able to edit that out, do you think? Can I hold him?
Yeah, yeah.
That would be, I'm like dying to hold him anyway.
Oh, did you know? He's like, someone's getting me.
These things are always
like, oh, I like your hair.
Oh, yes, you do. Like, who are you, lady friend? How are you? Oops, your arms are stuck in there.
Okay. He's like, just get me, I'm excited.
Oh, you feel so good. Okay.
Oh.
Thank you. Okay, now I know it's hard to get back into it.
Okay. Okay, so by the time that I had asked for the epidural, because my contractions were crazy. Oh, on a side note, you could... On the monitor was, there was a monitor next to my bed that was showing me the level of pain that I should be receiving from my contractions. So it would range from anywhere from like 50 to 100 to like 300, I suppose, when it's supposed to be the most painful. And I had been experiencing contractions for quite a few hours of that 30 hours of labor. And it was in the middle of the night when I rolled over and I told my husband that, oh my gosh, Jesse, it hurts so bad. I'm like, I don't know what to do. And Jesse just looks at me. He's like, I don't know what you want me to do, babe, but I'm so tired. I gotta rest. I just stared at him. And then the next day, I think he was trying to make up for it. And so he was like sitting next to me. The monitor was between us. I was laying down in the bed in the hospital gown. And I'm like squeezing his hand as I'm experiencing contractions. And I'm like, oh, Jesse. And he looks up. And I think this was supposed to make me feel better, but it had the opposite effect. He looked at the monitor. He goes, oh, no, babe, that wasn't even a bad one. It was only in the hundreds. You should be okay. So... So anyways, by the time I had asked for my epidural, the nurse came in and she told me, you know, she explained what I would be receiving, and I was kind of going back and forth because I didn't want my baby to be all hopped up on drugs when I had him, and I wanted to do it naturally. This was before I knew that I had to have a C-section, and she just kind of looked at me because I think she was tired of me talking it through and kind of being, you know, not knowing what I wanted. And she was like, well, you don't have to take it if you don't want to. I'm like, but I want to take it. And she was like, well, just let me know when you made a decision. So I shared all that to let you know that by the time it was time for my C-section, I was stress level 10 with everything that had been going on. But the doctor came, and from the point that my C-section was scheduled, everything just flowed so quickly and everything just happened. And I think it was about 45 minutes tops from the time that they had scheduled my C-section to the time the baby was due. So what had happened was the doctor came and got me. And the first stop was to receive my anesthesia. My doctor came in, and what she had me do was hold her and lean on her. And the anesthesiologist went into my lower back. They cleaned the area, and then they put in the drip somewhere near my spinal cord. It was a spinal tap, I think was what they called it. And then so as I lost feeling in my body, I could just rest on my doctor. And then she laid me down. And this table was like probably like what I imagine the crucifix looked like, because that's all that they offer you. That's all the space that they provide, is a long beam down the center with two beams going down the side that your arms are supposed to be laid out on. And then they put a sheet. So then when they laid me down, they put a sheet between me and the doctor team so that I couldn't see. But my doctor did note that there was a mirror behind me in case I wanted to watch them open my stomach, pull out my guts, and then also rip out the baby. No, thank you. So I remember I started getting a little bit loopy because I think they also provided me with a bit of morphine because I was kind of anxious and stressed out at the time. But I do remember as I was calming down in my mind, this kind of made me laugh. So the team of doctors is quickly going to work. Everyone's cleaning me, getting everything set up, making sure that the drip is working. And one of the doctors puts on music. And meanwhile, as I say, these doctors do this all the time. So they aren't even aware of me, really. You know, I'm just part of their project. And so they're just talking about their weekend plans and their lives and what they had for lunch. And so, and the music's playing. And I think it's Journey. And it's like, or no, Hall and Oates, Rich Girl. And one of the doctors like stops in the middle of his conversation and he's like, "Who put this on?" And the black doctor goes, "I did." And he looks at him, he's like, "You did?" And he's like, "What? Just because I'm black, I should put on Jay-Z or something?" It just made me laugh. So anyways, the doctor tells me that she's ready to go. The room is freezing cold. There's nothing in it except for all of the machines, the equipment. You can hear the beep, the music playing, the anesthesiologist behind me. Jesse has now entered the room. He's sitting next to me to my left, holding my hand, but he has a clear line of sight to the operation that's about to happen. And everyone tells me that we're ready to go. And so I'm kind of delayed because of all the drugs that I'm on at this point. And so I speak up and I'm like, "Oh wait, Jesse, has it started? Have they started yet?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, it started." Apparently they're already like five cuts in at that point, but I couldn't feel anything. And then I was so anxious just knowing what was going on. I couldn't, and it just smelled like medicine in the whole room, and it was freezing the whole entire time. And which I could just feel kind of on my face, but not the rest of my body, obviously. And then they're cutting. Jesse's looking. He's squeezing my hand every once in a while, I think, as stuff happens, but I'm not really processing it to the level that I should. And then all of a sudden, I hear a little, I hear Jesse go, "Oh my gosh, I see him. I see him." And then I hear this like little like cry, and it's Miles, and they've pulled him out, and I look over to the left of me quickly as they're taking him over to get cleaned off and measured and weighed, and then they tell Jesse that he can come over, and I don't know how much time has passed, or there's a lot going on. The doctor's telling me that the baby's healthy and that everything's fine, and there's a lot of scuffle going on in the room. As they're like, I think, putting me back together, making sure that the baby is okay, coordinating the effort to reduce now my level of anesthesia. And so Jesse comes over and shows me the baby really quickly before they leave. And I spend the rest of my time getting stitched up and then move back into the room. And I go into kind of like this waiting area where I think it's where all mothers receive their children or like reunited with their children or are waiting for a room to open up for them to spend the rest of their time in the hospital. And I am so tired. And the first thing that they get me to do is try to breastfeed, but I'm falling asleep at this point. And so Jesse has the baby and the nurse comes next to me and she asks me, "Do you want to try to breastfeed?" And so I'm like, "Okay," because that's what I'm supposed to do. And so I'm barely able to move my arms. And so Jesse kind of puts the baby in my arms. The nurse comes over and guides the baby to my breast. And I don't at that point like really know what's going on. But I remember one of the last things I said, Jesse was like, "Don't drop that baby." I'm like, "I'm not." And Jesse's like, "Do you want me to hold the baby?" I'm like, "I think so." I'm like, "You're so much better at this than I am." And I just fall asleep. And I think I just stayed there for a while Jesse's mom and my mom come to the hospital to greet us. And then I get moved into my room, and where I spend the rest of the time in the hospital. The hardest, and then from then on, that point on, the hardest point for me, the hardest part of the hospital stay for me was trying to breastfeed. And there's so much pressure around breastfeeding, and there's not a lot of information or coaching from, I guess, the patient perspective. It's just, oh, you've got to do this, and like, let's just get it done. And so your main focus is just to make it work, because your baby will not be smart, healthy, or alive and thriving if you're not breastfeeding. But they didn't tell me that for the first few days I was only going to be producing colostrum, which is the clear liquid, and that it wasn't going to be the creamy white milk that you're used to seeing. So I'm thinking that something's wrong. And although the lactation consultant had come and see me, I think she's just supposed to be, she's supposed to see all these moms within a certain amount of time. And so she spends a little bit of time with me, gives me some tips and leaves, but there's not really like one-on-one support, which they said that I could receive after I left the hospital. But my mom came and she told me to go ahead and just feed the baby formula. But I told her, I'm like, I'm not supposed to, I have to breastfeed the baby. And she's like, we're arguing, because she's like, he's so hungry. And then, which leads into the other part about having, coming from a different cultural background. So whenever my mom would come to the hospital in Korea, they put something heavy on the baby's chest in order to help him sleep so that they don't fidget and move around. Well, in the United States, you're not supposed to have anything around the baby, no blankets, no dolls or anything. So my mom, when she would come visit me in the evening and the baby was laying down, Miles was sleeping, she would put some pillows on him, on his chest. And then in the morning when the pediatrician came or when the nurse would come, they would look at the baby and be like, oh no, you can't have this, and take it off. But at night my mom would come and keep doing the same thing. So I because, you know, from being an Asian American, it's kind of half and half. I take the doctor's orders when it comes to a lot of things. But then there are just some things that I trust my mom with based upon her experience raising children and what's worked for generations of women in the past. So I kind of have a healthy balance of, you know, I think parenting methods or styles based upon that perspective. But it wasn't too long before I was home, and Miles was wonderful right from the beginning. I remember when he put, when they first put him on my chest so that we could bond, he lifted his head immediately, and I knew that he was going to be a strong baby. And he has always been a strong baby, a really good baby. He slept through the night really early on. He never fussed, or he didn't cry through the night. He only cried if he needed something or was bored or tired. And then he was born in September, so it was warm in that, warm around that time. But my mom wanted him to be covered head to toe, which was one thing that I told her was ridiculous because we live in Arizona. Also in Korea, when you have a baby, they give you seaweed soup to help with your milk production, and you have to eat it every day. And so women just coming over with seaweed soup for weeks and weeks, and finally I just started freezing it because I wasn't eating it. And then finally I was honest and told my mom to stop because I was tired of eating seaweed soup. And it was also hot outside, so no one wants to eat hot soup while it's hot outside. And then so my mom also started bringing me kale chips because she was really concerned about the baby getting enough milk, especially after the whole experience at the hospital.
So you stuck with breastfeeding then?
Yes. So I did stick with breastfeeding with Miles, and I breastfed him for about 4 months until I started working again, going back to work full time. And I tried pumping, but I'm a communications manager for a health insurance company, and the culture there is to have a lot of meetings. The meetings pop up at any time, so it really didn't work for as far as scheduling the breastfeeding sessions with my role or within our company, just because I couldn't be consistent with it. So from there, I think I tried pumping for about 2 weeks, and then I just went to feeding him at morning and night until my milk started to slowly go down, and then I just stopped cold turkey, which was extremely painful because the milk gets stuck. Backed up, and it's—I don't know—it just really hurt. Thankfully, I never got mastitis or anything or any infections from it. But it's interesting though. With Miles, I didn't breastfeed him for very long, or I breastfed him for about 3 months. With Davis, which is my second child, and he's about 2-3 years younger than Miles, and he was a really hard child to breastfeed. He was always hungry. And I had a bit of baby blues with Davis. My incision didn't heal that well. Jesse and I were fighting a lot. Miles had a cold that he infected the whole family with when I got home. And I was just exhausted and I remember even in the hospital, the other moms would ask if there was something wrong with my baby or if he was getting circumcised because he cried so loudly and so much. And it was just because he was so hungry. And then finally, in the hospital at this time, none of the nurses were encouraging me to give him any type of formula or supplement at all, until one night there was this Asian nurse who came in. She was like, "Do you want a little bit of formula?" And I was like, "Yes." And she's like, "It's okay, I supplemented with my children." And so she brought me some, and I remember the day nurse came in, she was like, "Oh, so you decided to give him formula?" And I told her, I was like, "Well, he was really hungry." I'm like, what they did was they put a certain type of contraption on the formula that they gave, which is all individually bottled and it's only good for a few hours anyways. But they put connected these tubes to the formula bottle so that I could tape the tube to my nipple so that I could squeeze the tube for the baby to eat out of. But then as he's eating, he's sucking on my boob and my nipple so that it stimulates milk production. But I had to like clean that out every time I used it. It was a lot of like, when it seemed cool and I thought it was working, but it was also, and it was working, but it was also a lot of work. Cause you have to clean out the tube after every use. And like when you're going in a hospital bed, recovering from a C-section, it's just a lot of work on my end. And also trying to get someone, making sure to time it correctly so someone's there to help me.
What is the recovery like on a C-section?
About 8 weeks is what they offer you. So,
put a tape over?
Yes. So what they do is you're stapled clothes. After they stitch you up, they staple you clothes, and then they put this sticky bandage over you. And before you leave the hospital, you have to be able to A, pass gas, walk on your own, and then your wound has to be closed for the most part. So they open it up, and then they remove the stitches, or the staples. They just cut the staples and pull them out. And then they put clear tape over you to help keep it tight, you know, so while you're fully recovering and healing. You're not supposed to drive or hold anything heavier than your newborn baby. They really want you to relax as much as possible and just kind of like stay still to let the wound heal. And you definitely, one of the things that they stress is don't sweep, because I think that motion and the movement works that part of your abs, and especially that back and forth pulling from sweeping. And they also give you Percocet and stool softeners. And then obviously you're still taking prenatal vitamins, which I found interesting that they gave you Percocet considering that in your breastfeeding, considering that while you're pregnant, they only want you to have Tylenol. So I tried to not take and they give you also ibuprofen at the time, which is also funny because they tell you, discourage you from drinking for so long, you know, and having coffee, but they're giving you these heavy duty drugs while you're breastfeeding. So, but my doctor actually told me that if you can drink and still drive, you're okay to breastfeed. Because she said that there's a natural filtration system that happens in your breasts when you're breastfeeding, so that if you're having a couple glasses of wine and you're still coherent enough to drive, then chances are there isn't enough in your system that it'll affect your breast milk. But I thought that was funny because every other provider I speak to is very against, you know, they're very strong on their medical morals. So when I had gotten home with Davis, everything was different. With Miles, everything was so great. And probably because the novelty of it being the first time and having all these new experiences, it was just more exciting than anything else. With Davis, he was also unplanned. I also cried. and then I was excited about him more towards the end of the pregnancy when he was about to come. I had the coming home and recovering was hard because I had the baby blues at the time. And also the incision from the C-section didn't heal that well. It was a little bit open in one side because I guess the scar tissue was pushing out from the inside out. And so I was in pain. I was tired. I was mildly depressed. And I wasn't able to breastfeed. I was living in Mesa, Arizona at the time. It was January, so it was cold, and it was dark a lot. And I was cooped up in this really small room. And first of all, I'm not a huge fan of Mesa, Arizona to begin with, but it's what we could afford at the time. Or it's what we can afford right now while just my husband's going to school full time. And this house was built in like the 1920s something. It's a really old home and the rooms are all really small. And we have a California king size bed. So I'm sitting in this room where all we can fit for furniture is our bed and our end tables with really closed walls around us, and everything is kind of old, and I feel like maybe has like a little bit of a smell to it inside the home because there's a basement area that gets flooded sometimes, and that, you know, it opens up into the house, rest of the house. And so I'm like, and like the sheets are all old, like older and stained from our first child and like kind of like not fitting that well from us putting it in the dryer too many times. And then the blankets are hand-me-downs from his grandma. So they're a little bit worn out. Everything's like a shade of blue and it's dark outside. The walls are white, a little bit dingy from the yellow lighting. And I'm just laying in bed with this child 24 hours a day. And just my focus is just trying to get him to eat and be happy. And so I wasn't as successful breastfeeding Davis. I finally broke down and told Jesse that I just can't do it. I have to start supplementing. But because I started supplementing, because I started supplementing, my milk production went down. And so I stopped feeding him sooner than I would have liked to. And it also made me feel kind of guilty because I wasn't breastfeeding him throughout his early development days. But he's a very healthy boy now. We made it through. Everyone's still alive in one piece. And Davis was so wonderful that we decided to have a third child unexpectedly. So when I was about 4 months out, I think Davis was like 4 to 6 months, I found out that I was pregnant with Connor. And that was the biggest shock I had ever received. I had gotten on some special birth control for mothers who are breastfeeding, but it had made me nauseous. My system wasn't responding to it very well. And so I stopped taking it. But I thought, surely I would not get pregnant so quickly after I had a baby, and certainly not a third time. So we found out that I was pregnant with Connor because, you know, biology does work. And this time I had my tubes tied. But I went to a different hospital this time, and the experience was so much better than with my first and certainly with my second child. The staff was much more friendly. They took the time to explain everything that was going to happen. Everyone was just polite and friendly at this place. And they did not give me morphine or anything this time when I went in to have the C-section, which I think made a huge difference. There's a domino effect when it goes to the recovery from your labor and delivery, that it all starts with that first, you know, delivery experience, and everything just kind of adds to it. So because I wasn't on morphine, I wasn't as tired, and I was clear-headed when I first received Connor. And so I was able to bond with him more quickly. I didn't fall asleep and spend more time holding him, and also just right from the start try to start feeding him. The lactation consultant this time came in and she explained, you know, first you're going to have the colostrum. That's okay. That should be enough. Just let him nurse as much as possible. The room was much brighter wherever we were at. I think we're also on a different side of the hospital where the sun came in through the window. The room was a lot bigger. And although I am Christian, the other hospital that we were at, they put me in a room with a crucifix on the wall, which was maybe supposed to be comforting, but it wasn't. I don't think the crucifix, I personally just don't find the, you know, Jesus on the cross to be comforting. So this room was just like open, and it was clean, but it didn't feel extremely sterile. And plus the nurses coming in and out were just really friendly and nice, and I think that just had a different energy, and it just made the whole experience better. And I was seeing things from a different perspective. And so and also by this time Jesse's further on in his studies and has a more clear focus of what he wants to do. He's quit drinking and smoking, and so things are definitely better. You know, I feel like we're on the same track now, and he's taken his career more seriously, and so everything like in our personal lives is much more stable. You know, work is going well for me. I received a promotion and also a raise and a bonus, you know, that I wasn't expecting. And so things at home are going much better. So everything with Connor is going much better. And although he was a child that I was probably the most, and I feel awful for saying this, the most sad about finding out that I was pregnant with, he ended up being the best one overall, like from the beginning to even now at this point. He's such a good baby. He's so sweet and calm. And although we went back home to that home in Mesa with the small room and the bed that's too high for me to get on and like no furniture, and it's like a closed in like cell, because I just felt more at peace with the whole situation, I wasn't as impacted by my surroundings, my physical surroundings. My attitude had changed, and so my whole like perspective on the situation changed. And it's just been a great experience with Connor ever since. He's such a wonderful addition to the family. And now where Davis is at as a one-year-old, he is so cute and so sweet, and I love him so much that I just can't imagine life without any of these three boys. And I truly do feel like that they are a blessing to have. And you know, we made the decision that we're not going to have any others. I think part of it is because I really wanted a girl, and this is something that I've come to conclude on my own, is that you know, we don't all, I really wanted to have a girl. And with Connor, the reason why I decided to have a C-section or to circumcision after, so I didn't want to, the reason why I decided to get my tubes tied after having Connor is because I felt like our family was complete. And I really wanted to be responsible financially with what we could provide for these children. Although we could provide an endless amount of love for a lot of children, I want them all to be able to have the best experiences that they can have in life. And if someone gets accepted to an Ivy League school, I don't want it to be an issue. If they all three get accepted to an Ivy League school, I don't want it to be an issue or concern of finances why they don't pursue that. Or even now, as they're trying to figure out who they are and what their gifts and abilities and talents are, I wanted to be able to financially provide for them to explore those different interests. You know, I don't want to ever be able to tell them that they don't have choices in life. And from me, on a more personal note, because Jesse has two daughters from previous relationships, I feel at peace with our family because for them, they'll always be daddy's little girl. And there won't be someone on our side, our end of the family, that they have to compete with. And they won't ever feel like they're outsiders because daddy has a little girl that he spends all of his time with. And they only see him sometimes. So they feel less of a connection with him. So for me, having everyone in our family have a place is more important than me having a little girl who looks like me that I can dress up, you know. And plus, like, the Jesse's daughters have been so wonderful. They are so connected to the boys. They love having little brothers. The brothers love looking at, like, having the older sisters to look up to and play with. And it's just, our whole family just feels like this is who we are. This is where, this is our family. This is the starting point of the rest of our lives. And so now we're really excited to move on to the next chapter of really trying to develop these little human beings and helping them to be responsible, mature, you know, God-fearing, young people who just make a positive impact on the world, you know, who receive love in the home and then can go out and love other people. So that's really where we're focused on now. And I'm really excited. We have everyone in place. You know, they're all so different and so unique, but they're the perfect people for us.
Great. That was awesome. Actually, can you hit the stop button for me?